It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And today is a day that would normally strike terror into the hearts of men everywhere.
It is?
It is April 15th.
Oh, yes.
But it's not tax day.
Not this year.
You got a long weekend to get ready for all of you procrastinators out there. Of course, the smart ones among us just file the automatic extension, then don't have to worry about it until late in the year. But it is not tax day, so we can be happy instead. But I do want to spend some time talking about taxes, because there is no time of the year where it's easier to get your attention than it is in April, especially right around the 15th. And there are things that we can all do better than we do now. And never know, you might learn something absolutely helpful. I know I do every year when this comes around. So, meanwhile, it's another absolutely stunning day on the First Coast, and it just doesn't get much better than this.
It is really beautiful out today.
Yeah, and we're accompanied today in the studio by Adam's son, who has a lacrosse game following this, and I would have to think it's just going to be such a good time.
It should be, yeah. It's a great day for it.
It really is. A good day for almost anything, including getting in your car and going for a ride, at which time you should turn on 101.1 or 600 AM and try to hear the whole show today. So drive slowly wherever you're going, if that's the case. Welcome back to everybody who's always here, because we appreciate you guys. And if you're new to the show, try to stick around and listen for a while. There's always something that goes on in the course of an hour that can be taken home and put in your little memory banks. Save a couple of open spaces like I do for every show and see what happens. You never know. I always like to kind of sum up my feelings about the market before I turn it over to Adam. And for the last 3 weeks, I felt like a broken record. It didn't feel good, but then we added up the numbers and it was okay. Well, this week, I got a better feeling out of it this week than I have lately, and added them up and it came out okay. And I don't know if you feel the same way, but
yeah, it was a decent week.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing special about it, but it wasn't bad. And that makes it a little bit special compared to the last 18 months or so.
Succinct way to put it.
It's really hard to believe, but we're in earnings season again.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened.
That's how you get a year older quickly.
Yeah.
Every earnings season, every 3 months comes in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I got to say, I'm pretty happy with the way it's gone so far.
Especially if you own shares in a big bank.
Yeah. That we're supposed to be in the middle of a bank collapse.
Yeah.
And
they forgot to tell JP Morgan.
And PNC Financial and Wells Fargo and Citi, who all posted pretty strong results.
Yeah. And Citi was supposed to be dismal.
Yeah.
It was only dismal compared to JP, people like that. But compared to itself, which is, of course, the only valid comparison, it was fine.
It was more than fine. It was really strong.
It was good.
If you were thinking that that the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank was going to cause widespread problems throughout the banking sector, it doesn't appear that happened or will happen.
That's why we kept saying this has nothing to do with anything except one idiotic bank serving one idiotic group of people who take too much risk and don't handle it right.
Yep,
that
I agree.
Was it.
I agree.
It was management. It wasn't systemic. It was management.
There was a couple of banks, but when one is a crypto lending bank, do you really need to say anything else?
I don't.
No. I don't. I still don't know what that is.
I don't either. Yeah. You borrow something that you can't see or feel, so you can trade it for something else that you can't see or feel.
That swings.
And you pay a whole bunch of interest on it.
And don't forget the part where it changes 5 to 10% in a day or a week in value. So that seems like a great idea.
Like you said, enough said.
Yeah. Anyways, everything from earnings to balance sheets, the banks that reported all looked really good. So I was pleasantly surprised in that regard. Earnings trickled in this week, but they're going to really pour in next week. There's a ton of earnings on tap during the week. Tesla and Netflix and several others. So it's going to get a little crazy next week. I think this week was a bit of the calm before the storm. So I don't know if that storm is a good storm or a bad storm, though. Yeah, we'll see.
Unlike the one in Fort Lauderdale, you mean?
That was crazy. Shut down the airport. That was a storm. That was some good old fashioned spring showers down in South Florida.
One big one.
For the week, all three major indexes were in the black. It definitely wasn't a great week, but it really wasn't bad. The Dow, which has lagged all the other indexes this year, added 1.2%. The S&P was up 0.8, and the NASDAQ was up 0.3. The reason behind the rally wasn't earnings, though. It was actually the inflation data that released this week, showing inflation is basically coming down. And in some cases, it's coming down pretty quickly. The CPI report showed a headline number. It showed a gain of 0.1% in March, and that was less than what was expected at 0.2%. Now, they call that a miss, but in this case, it's good news.
Right.
So it actually brought the full year inflation number for March year over year down to 5% that's a full percent lower than the 6% print that was in February. So a lot of this just has to do with timing. That was inevitable that if inflation was down at all, the year-over-year numbers are going to look better, especially when we get into the summer months. They're going to probably come down into the threes or possibly even the twos, just based on where it was this time last year. So that was what caused the positive reaction. Core prices, which strip out the volatile food and energy sectors, were up 0.4% in March, largely driven by rising rents. So that's one area. It's a little bit weird because rents are such a lagging indicator of everything because most people sign year to or more leases. And so the data that you get is sometimes a little bit behind the curve when it comes to versus, let's say, house sales. Those pretty much are real time. When a house sells, they record the price and they know what it sold for. With rents, you've only got a certain percentage of the inventory coming on every month, and a lot of it is locked up in these year-long leases. And when those units come on the market 6 months from now, they're going to be significantly higher than what they were when those leases were signed 6 months ago. So
I'd like to see what renewals are doing.
I would also I hear mixed data on that, and I think it depends on what part of the country and even what. If you're in a high-end unit, if you're in a low-end unit, rents are definitely still increasing in Florida, but I would guess that in some other parts of the country that is not the case.
You can count on that. And that can trickle into other real estate, too, commercial real estate.
For sure.
Vacancies abound out there.
They really do, but in Florida, it's not bad right now. It's not at full occupancy, but it's certainly not as bad as other parts of the country.
Yeah, and you know, if we keep our ears open and just keep listening to Gavin Newsom, we'll get even better because he knows the answers.
Why doesn't he implement them in his own state? That's the question.
I don't know. Anyway, I like to make fun of him, but that's the low-hanging fruit when it comes to making fun of politicians, Gavin Newsom.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot more information on inflation and retail sales coming up, but we're almost to the break, so I'll have to pick it up on the other side.
All right. Well, we'll get a few bills paid here, and we'll have a trivia question like that. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
We have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Did Ken deliver yet?
Yep. All the cards went out this week. So if you were missing them, you should have them now.
Or if you're one of the nice folks like Lane that donated them, then we'll take care of that.
Yes, and actually I got a text message from Carolyn, who runs the foundation, and she was so grateful. So thank you, Lane.
Wonderful.
And Pat.
Yeah, very good. All right, anyway, you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. There is a phenomenon going on that, when you think about it, should surprise very few people, that there's a tendency for, shall we say, seasoned citizens to continue to work longer and for many to go back to work. There's a lot of reasons for that, inflation being one of them, of course, and probably a lot of boredom, stuff like that. But I tell you, there's a heck of a lot of employers out there that are really happy about this. I've been hearing these stories over and over lately about, oh my God, we finally found somebody who works or knows a few things. It doesn't have to be told 10 times to do something. So it's becoming wide enough spread that they're starting to do some statistics on it. And the one I really like lately is between now and 2030, what percentage increase are they expecting in the 75 and up workforce? 75 and up, the percentage increase in that workforce. And this is not a long time. That's only 7 years away. So it's a percent number. And I'll give you a hint. I'm making it easy for everybody. It isn't expected to double, in case you're thinking it's 200 or 300%. It's not. It's between 0 and 99.9.
Wow, that narrows it down. All right.
It do. Well, but not by much.
We talked about the CPI, which was pretty good news. But if you think that was good news, check out the PPI. It was fantastic. The PPI declined 0.5% in March, which was well below the 0% that was expected. Producer prices are now up just 2.7% from where they were a year ago. And core PPI was down 0.1%, and it's now just up 3.4% from a year ago. This was the largest decrease in PPI since the early days of the pandemic. And the PPI is almost more important than the CPI because it is the inputs to everything that we buy. So when you see this come down, you will see the price of goods in many cases start to come down, or services if the case may be. But this is generally more of a manufacturing index, and that is where cost savings really get passed on to the consumers. And we're seeing that in the retail sales numbers now in many cases. So this is great news. And this will also give the Fed a bit more ammunition to stop hiking rates, which is the real goal here.
Now the $64,000 question. Are they listening?
Well, no. The current Fed forecast...
That was the right answer, by the way, everybody, in case you didn't know.
The current Fed forecast is for a 25 basis point rate hike on May 3rd, and there is a good portion of the country that feels like this will be the last rate hike in the cycle. Unfortunately, there's also a good portion of the country that feels like it will be the last rate hike because we will then enter a mild or moderate recession, and that could be the next problem that we have to face. So right now it's still hiking rates, and then maybe later this year we get a recession. So
you know they've got a reputation to maintain of always overshooting both directions.
Always. They have to do it.
There's no reason to think that this time won't be just like all the rest.
No, definitely not. If the Fed was looking for a reason to stop hiking rates, something we would be fine with, they could perhaps take a look at what happened to retail sales in March, which was nothing short of just a complete collapse. They wanted to slow down the economy, and they really, really accomplished it, according to this report. Part of this was the price of gas dropping, which caused gas stations to be the weakest category in the report. The headline number on the report was a drop of 1% versus a 0.5% expected. Gas stations were off 5.4% in the month and have declined 14.25% in a year. At the opposite end, online sales were up almost 2% in the month and are up 12.3% in a year. Some other notable decreases were general merchandise, which was off 3%, and electronics and appliances and building materials, which were both off 2%. I would say the Fed has certainly succeeded in slowing down the economy.
Yeah, but they better be darn careful, because what's happening now in the oil industry with OPEC Plus, I've already seen it. I got gas yesterday, which, as you know, I don't do often, and it was way up there.
Yeah, I just got it on the way here, and it was significantly higher.
Yep.
Another area that the Fed has depressed is small business optimism. So good job there, guys. The reading fell from 90.9 to 90.1 in March, with most categories failing to show any improvement or weakening. Only 2% of respondents think that now is a good time to expand their business. That ties a record low.
Wow.
And cost of labor is still the biggest problem, followed by inflation and then quality of labor. Those are the three big ones right now. Not really any surprises there.
Fits in
there
with my older people working category.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it was a pretty dismal report. Small businesses are really not feeling great about their situations right now.
Nope, and I can't blame them. You see it all the time with the help wanted signs. That your first clue when you walk up to a small business is if they've got help wanted signs where the paper's starting to yellow, You know, they haven't had much success hiring, and it does not seem to be getting better. When we look at our monthly job reports and look at the number of people coming in the workforce and the number of people going out, there's still a lot of non-participation out there, and we need people to go back to work.
Yeah, it's true. There's still, I don't know, 6 million people that are say they're looking for work, but I don't think they're looking that hard. Because there's still plenty of open jobs, and if they wanted to be working, it certainly feels like they could be. I'm not sure what's going on in that
situation.
They're
holding out for management positions.
It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good old Uncle Eddie.
Yep. I don't know. It's still a strange situation. The employment data this week, weekly claims came in right around where they did last week, which was elevated, but not to a level of concern. And continuing claims actually went in the right direction. They dropped a bit. So it's still tough to tell what's going on in the labor market. I've never really seen anything like we've seen in the last three years. The pandemic just threw a real wrench into the labor market.
The GDP tracker is running ahead of estimate, too.
Yeah,
which I saw that. Again, this so conflicts with the more or less common thought that we're headed into a recession. The yield curve is still inverted.
Yeah. Severely inverted.
If you did a Ben Franklin balance sheet thing, and the left was reasons we won't, and the right was reasons we will, they'd be the same length.
Yeah. By the way, if you have some cash sitting on the sidelines, now is probably the right time to tie it up in a CD, or especially if you don't need it for a couple of years. Short term CDs rates are through the roof, or treasuries, or do something with it. At the very least, get it in a high yield savings account. You can make almost 4-4.5%.
Yeah, and if you've got a couple of years, as you said, the 2-year CD rates are really outstanding.
Great. Yeah, they're somewhere in the neighborhood of 4.9%.
Yeah, there's an outstanding probability that's going to beat inflation over those 2 years.
It's true, which is. So something we haven't said in a couple of years.
The oldest saying in the book, there isn't now, never has been, and never will be a short-term investment that outpaces inflation and taxes. That's still true because of the taxes and inflation on the CDs, but it's as close as I've ever seen it.
Yeah, it's really close. And there's a very good chance those same CDs, if you buy them a year from now, will be paying significantly less than that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And if you want to go a little bit further out, the rates are still pretty good. Just depends on your time frame. If you don't want to risk having a collapse in rates, by the way, you've only got a few days left to buy the I-bonds at the current rate and lock in your first 6 months anyway.
Yeah, they're going to drop pretty significantly as well.
I suspect they will. Good morning, Leroy.
Good morning. How are you folks doing today?
Great. What's happening?
Well, I heard you're about to go on a break.
Yes, pretty soon. You got time?
Yeah, I was going to take a nap at your trivia real quick.
Sure.
Go ahead.
96.5.
You read all the right stuff, don't you? That is that is exactly correct. And when you think about it, at 75 and up, it's almost going to double. Isn't that something?
That is very hard to believe.
Well, I'm doing some investigation. I'm going to write a blog on this in the next week about reasons that this phenomenon is going on. And part of it is just very simply that we're living longer and we're better at higher ages, but there are economic and non-economic reasons to do so. But I was kind of fascinated. I didn't expect anything of that magnitude whatsoever.
No, I would have thought maybe 15%.
Yeah, I was thinking 15 to 25 even. I wouldn't have been surprised at all. But 96 and a half, my gosh.
I had to look twice. I said, that can't be right.
Well, you older folks, if you need some extra cash, go get a job. They're all everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. All right, we appreciate it. We got your address.
All right.
Thanks, Leroy. Thank you much. Have a good weekend.
All right, bye.
Yeah, that I thought was an absolutely astounding thing.
It really is. I guess, what was the time frame on that? 7 years?
By 2030.
Yeah, you've got a couple of things going on there. People are living longer. The cost of living has gone up so much. Who can afford to retire? The Social Security age, if you want to get to full, it's 70 now. So,
and I think a lot more people are going to be willing to wait till 70.
Yeah, I agree.
You're racking up some nice increases.
They're huge increases. When you look at it from 62 to 70, that massive increase, it's a big number for the rest of your life, especially if you're going to live into your 90s.
And if you celebrate your 65th birthday, that doesn't mean that's retirement day.
No. Nope.
What it means is now you're really likely to live a long time. That is there's a major cutoff between about 62 and 65. If you reach your 65th birthday, that is exceptionally good news for you. So you ought to think about it that way. All right, we'll be right back after a break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, I could give you an unofficial trivia question. And if you get it right, you earn from me compliments of me. A big attaboy, or attagirl, or atta what her name, whatever. You know what I mean. The number one fear among investors is a market drop cutting into their savings. What should that fear be? The actual thing that they face in retirement is the most important thing is not that. Markets recover. What is the most important thing? And we'll take anybody's guess on that one. All right, dumb quote of the week. Last week, actually, but I didn't get to it last week. This is it. Well, we sometimes find $50 million of assets lying around that we lost track of, such as life, unquote. Spoken by the infamous Sammy Bankman-Fried, who found the lack of accounting controls at his company, quote, amusing.
It's hard to believe that that company blew up like that.
Isn't it?
With leadership.
That makes a cryptocurrency lending bank sound safe. I didn't think that could be done.
It's crazy.
As I asked Adam, do you suppose Sammy ever heard the word fiduciary? Yeah, oh boy, I tell you. Anyway, one more thing. You know how I'd love to bring these to your attention once in a while. I probably pass over 9 out of 10 of them, but when advisors go rogue and steal your money, latest one caught my eye, and I do this because there's always a lesson to be learned here. The investors are not free of blame when something like this happens. There are things that you could do that would make sure you didn't get there. Well, this guy in Atlanta, he's now missing, and he went missing in 2020 after they found out about his 100 investors that were scammed in a Ponzi scheme that he was running. Whether he's alive or not, I don't know. I reckon that depends on who he scammed. That could be very interesting. Sometimes street justice works really well. So he was selling illegal promissory notes. Selling promissory notes. And by whom, for what? It didn't matter. He just promised that you make a lot of money on them. So I guess what, greed wins out again? So the rule, and you've all heard me say it many, many times, the rule is very simple. If you cannot go to an independent third-party website that you've already heard of and see every penny of your money that is invested with that advisor in listed securities, then expect to get ripped off, and you probably won't get disappointed. Learn, people. It's not how quickly you can get rich. It is how certainly you can do it in a slow and steady fashion. John D. Rockefeller, one of my favorites from him. If your only goal is to become rich, you will never achieve it. Think about that.
Yep, it's true.
It is.
We have a public service announcement real quick. The Joe 13 Golf Classic I've been talking about for a few weeks. It's coming up pretty quick. It's on Sunday, May 7th. It is almost sold out. If you want to get a foursome together, we've got it's for a great cause. To cure childhood cancer, all the proceeds of the event go to St. Jude's Research Hospital, and it's sold out for 2 years, and the only 2 years it's been in existence, and it will definitely sell out this year. There's also opportunities for sponsorship that's coming to a close pretty soon, so they can get all the logos onto all the things. So there isn't a whole lot of time left there. But if you want to come out for a great day on Sunday the 7th, go to joestrong.org and click on register here, and we'll hope to see you out there.
That is sneaking up on us, isn't it?
It really is.
It's just incomprehensible to me that it could be April 15th already.
Agreed. I don't know how it happened.
Weird. Well, speaking of April 15th, I'm going to do a little bit more in-depth on taxes, but I found one that was very interesting today that the cyber guy found. There's a new malware campaign out there where people are receiving emails that say they're from the IRS and they want your W-9 form. And for those of you who don't know what a W-9 is, that's a verification of your Social Security number. Oop, there you go. There's red flag number one, right? Ding, ding, ding. Now, it'll be attached, and the idea is you're going to have to download it and unzip, most likely, and it'll be a Word document or a OneNote document. Well, what's wrong with this picture? Well, first off, not from IRS. They don't do things that way. They could send you to a website, the IRS website, and say, search on form W-9 and fill it out and send it to us or whatever. But they're not going to send you something you have to download, so don't do it. So if you see anything like that, just remember, red flag, don't do it. It's not from IRS. And all forms should be PDFs, never Word, never OneNote, for the simple reason that those can be changed so easily. Also, check the email addresses when you're receiving these things. A lot of times these people don't even bother to put .gov on it. If you see anything that supposedly has to do with the government that doesn't end in .gov, run. Don't open it. Run. Delete it. Whatever. Report it if you want to. But just don't do it. It doesn't work. One more little thing on the side. On the 13th day of February, market genius from J.P. Morgan said, the market just reached its high point. You might as well sell because it's not going any higher in 2023. That day, it was 33,869. It's now 33,900, roughly. So apparently he was wrong. And that was after being down yesterday. Don't listen to these people. They're all out there trying to make you do something stupid. And just don't bite. My advice are just like to the fish out there. Just don't bite. All right. Two things that are almost impossible to drag anybody into a discussion about: taxes and insurance. Now, I'm not dealing with insurance right at the moment, so let's go to taxes. I could start this in May, and nobody would, hardly anybody wants to hear it now probably, but nobody would want to hear it, because once the 18th is gone, unless you file an extension, you're just out of sight, out of mind on taxes. But you shouldn't. Most people do not have a fundamental knowledge of the tax system itself or of the return. Now, if you're going to retire someday, and I'm developing a lot more on this too about people's expectations, Americans believe that they're going to need $1 million to retire, and only 29% of them think they're going to get there. What are the other 71% doing? Just sitting back and hoping they're wrong? You have to be proactive in this stuff. There is no easier way, in my mind, to make money than to not spend it. And there is no more satisfactory way to not spend it than to cut your own taxes down. But that requires paying some attention, and that requires knowing something about it. So my suggestion to you, whether you fill out your own or whether you have a tax professional do it, when it's done or about to be done, my preference would be before it's even filed, sit down and look at it and see what is on there and see if you understand it. The formula is pretty simple, really. First, you develop your total income, and then you have some adjustments, which we call above-the-line deductions. That gives you your adjusted gross income, which is used for several reasons further on down and taxes and benefits and other things. And then you have a reduction due to itemized or standard deductions, and you should know the difference, and you should know how to compute those. And then you figure your taxes from there, the taxes being the actual amount you owe. Once you've got that, you compare to how much you've paid in, and if you've overpaid, they'll send it back to you. And if you haven't, you have to send it to them, and you have to do that by Tuesday. You know, no matter what, you could file an extension to October if you want to, but the money you owe for last year has to be paid in by Tuesday, or you're going to have taxes or penalties and interest on it. So you got to figure that out. The number one lesson here is that if you understand more about your own return, you can start to project next year. You should never be caught short by underpaying your taxes for the next year. So in a nutshell, pull out your 1040. Remember, it used to be 2 pages long, had all kind of information on it, and then the genius Paul Ryan and his boyfriends, whatever, they decided that everybody should be able to file on a postcard. So when they did the rewrite in 2017, I guess, they were so proud they came out with a postcard and said, here's your form, here's your tax form. They didn't tell you about Schedules 1, 2, 3, 4, Schedule C, Schedule D, Schedule E, and all those other things. They all link off of that. So here's what you should look for first. Computing your income. I have said to people many times over many years, and they look at me like I'm crazy, no one ever paid a tax professional to compute their taxes. You pay a tax professional to compute your taxable income. The rest of it, you just plug it into a formula. Computing your taxable income is not that simple. And unless you are a simple W-2 employee with not much invested or anything like that, you probably have a few of these schedules and a few of these other things that are going to go into computing your income. I'm going to run over a couple of those and tell you what we do as financial planners when we ask somebody to come in and bring a couple of years of taxes, and I'll tell you what we look at. After the break, we got to pay a few more bills, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And my gosh, the day is going by in a big hurry. About to get outside and absorb some of this non-shovelable sunshine today. All right, tax day Tuesday. So take this time and just learn a little bit about it. If you're willing to devote the majority of your life on the top line, what that means is going to work, so you can improve your top line, you ought to be able to take an hour or two, once or twice a year, and think about your taxes. Because that is a place that is just so easy to miss something that would actually save you money. And I also do not like to ever hear people who say, well, I always leave IRS something to catch. And look at them like they're nuts. Okay, so you don't take all of your legal deductions because you think if you get audited and they find something, they're going to leave you alone. Is that what you just told me? That, you know what that might cost you in your retirement years? But if you don't take $500, or you don't take $300, you don't take $1,000, that is the dumbest single thing I've ever heard in my life. That's how scared people are when you say IRS. Don't be afraid of them. Follow the rules. Do it right. And they'll look at your return with an eye on the law, just like your preparer or your TurboTax or whatever do. And speaking of TurboTax, if you have not filed yet, and if you're on TurboTax or one of the other ones, you can do a little playing around by doing things like, well, what if I contributed more to my 401k, or what if I contributed more to my IRA or something like that, which you can still do until Tuesday on the IRA, not on the 401k. And if you see that knocking your taxes way down, that's money in your pocket twice, once for the long-term investment and once for the cash in your pocket. So there's always something to learn. Anyway, look at your 1040. Line 1A, W-2 amounts. The first thing we do when we bring new people into the office and start cruising through their tax return, okay, are they, is there any amount on the W-2? That means you work for a conventional employer in a conventional job where you get a W-2, you have withholding on it, and you pay your Social Security with a deduction, things like that. So it tells you right away what the general nature of the working life of people who you don't know yet, or yourself in your case, then it tells you a lot about that. Line 1C, tip income. There is a war on tips right now. It started at the White House, and they want your money. If you are working in jobs where you take tips, better you be a little more cautious than most people are. There are a lot of inaccuracies in tip reporting, shall we say, like the ones where you just sort of don't count them. And if it doesn't look right, if your lifestyle doesn't look right and you've got a job that makes a lot of tips, be really, really cautious and discuss this with your tax pro and see what you should do about it. You don't want to be tagged by these people, trust me. Line 2A, tax-exempt interest. If you have tax-exempt interest, it means you're investing in tax-exempt bonds, things like that. That's all fine. But you should understand that while they are tax-exempt, they are also a trigger for what happens when you get down into your Social Security. And I'll come back to that from there. But if there's a significant number in that column, then there are some significant things you ought to look for. 3A, dividends, same thing. If you've got big numbers in the dividends column, it means people are invested in stocks and bonds and that sort of thing, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But then you worry about, well, are they taking enough risk? Are they taking too much risk? And that kind of thing. For our purposes, that's a really important line. Also, if anybody has crypto, you probably don't know this, but IRS taxes crypto as an asset. And therefore, it has capital gains, that kind of thing. Which means if you need to offset some income or capital gains at other places and you've got some crypto and it happens to be down, you can play that game with the selling of the crypto or buying whatever, as long as you understand what the wash rule is. So it can actually cut your income tax bill a lot if you're willing to play that game a little bit. And with some things, that doesn't work, but with crypto, it would. 4A, IRA distributions. We look at somebody and say, how old are these people? Are they old enough they have to take distributions? And if so, are they? Or are they taking distributions, but their age doesn't show that they have to? Maybe there's a better way to fund some time and leave more of those tax-deferred assets to make money later. 5, pensions and annuities. Are you the lucky ones? If anybody's got pension income right now and it lasts forever, then you are very fortunate. Believe me, it is becoming more and more rare. The answer, by the way, I'm going to talk about the auxiliary trivia question right now. It is that people worry most that when they're going into retirement, they worry most about, well, will a market crash ruin my whole retirement concept? And that is not something that you ought to be worried too much about. For one thing, if that is your main concern, it is very likely you're not going to invest well because you'll be taking too little risk. So don't do that. Your major concern, though, the number one thing people should worry about is longevity. And this plays into what I was talking about with older people going back to work more and more. You have to solve the longevity equation through your Social Security, through your pensions, through your work, through your investment income, and that sort of thing, which means you can't overdraw. You need a reasonable withdrawal rate. And it, for a lot of people, if this is going to be an issue, it would be a really good time to speak with a financial advisor who is qualified. A lot of you use qualified tax preparers. They're called CPAs, C for certified. If you like to have your tax preparer certified, you should take a really good look at having your financial planner certified, CFP, Certified Financial Planner. That's what we are. That's what we do. And this is a place that we spend not an inordinate amount of time, a lot of time, looking at longevity of people and longevity of their cash flow and income, And it gets tougher and tougher as fewer and fewer people have defined benefit pension plans. So it's, you know, it's just one really, really big thing. There are two things that people are known to fear more than death. Public speaking, I can't help you with that one very much, and running out of money. We can help you with that one quite a bit, actually. And it might be by saying, get a job. You never know. 6A is Social Security payments. You should understand how your Social Security is taxed. If you are doing well other than Social Security, it's pretty simple. You're going to pay tax on 85% of your Social Security benefits. But if not, you should be aware of where the triggers are. And for doing Social Security, I mentioned earlier that you get an adjusted gross income, and I also mentioned there is tax-exempt interest that some people pay. Social Security does not work off of the usual adjusted gross income, or AGI. It works off the modified adjusted gross income, or MAGI. What's the difference for most people? Nothing. But for some people, you have to add in that tax-exempt interest. And if that interest is putting you over the line for a higher taxation, especially the bump from 50% taxable to 85, you got to take a serious look at whether or not you want to have that much income and what you might do about it. So again, the opportunity for planning is fantastic. Now, all of these ABCs in the first few columns have a corresponding B column. The B column is what part of that is taxable. This is where you need to understand things like the 50% or the 85% taxable for Social Security. And if you have withdrawals coming out of your pension or profit sharing plan, what part of those is taxable, if any? And if you don't understand those, you can't make better plans than what you've got. Line 7 is capital gains. And we've been talking a little bit about that. That's stocks and bonds and houses and all kinds of things, and also your crypto accounts. It, by working with your capital gains, you can modify your own income in many cases by doing things like tax loss harvesting. If that is available to you, and you can do without much penalty to you, can save, in many cases, thousands of dollars. Because one of the unindexed portions of the tax code is the $3,000 you're allowed to deduct every year on top of all your gains that were offset by losses. So if you get a $50,000 tax loss, it's going to take you a long time to get rid of it unless you can find another way to offset that with a gain. If you don't understand things like the wash sale rule and the treatment of investment income, again, you might want to take some serious time with a qualified planner. CPAs are good at some of this stuff. They are not always real good when it comes into the realm of pensions, profit sharing, IRAs, and investing. Some know a lot, some know very little. They'll plug in the form that you send them, and that's that.